Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri podcast by me, veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Because of Thanksgiving, I've been thinking about, well, I guess I better think about turning the radio off first. I've been thinking about scents, not S-E-N-S-E, but S-C-E-N-T-S, because of all of the different connections I make with the holiday season, various aromas, turkey, dressing. Also because as my cat Whittington has continually improved from his thyroid gland surgery, I've been aware of what he's been eating and how his eating habits have changed. Those of you who follow my blog know that Whit has gone from eating dry food to eating canned food, and some of the most despicable canned food. And not surprisingly, because he is 14, the foods that appeal to him the most are those that have the strongest aroma. I was thinking about this past week, too, because I went through a phase in which I thought I could smell tomcat pee, which I concluded was foolish unless I was hallucinating because I do not have an intact male cat. Nonetheless, the odor was so distinct. I spent a fair amount of time sniffing around my kitchen, down on my knees, sniffing around the baseboard, sniffing the cupboards, wiping them down, looking for any evidence that, you know, Whit might have developed some sort of testosterone-secreting tumor and started spraying. I couldn't find anything, and it took me a while to pin down the source, and the source was the food. This particular cat food, to me, smelled distinctly like cat pee. And that got me thinking about cats and how important their sense of smell is to them, in particular because they're naturally nocturnal animals. There are many places where scent plays a role in the cat's life, but it's particularly important when it comes to their appetite. If you watch a cat hunt, and of all of our domestic animals, the cat is our only true carnivore. Being a true carnivore doesn't mean that they don't eat vegetation. It just means that they eat their vegetation pre-digested. In the case of the cat eats the whole shooting match. And in the process of doing that, gets all the proteins, minerals, vitamins, and also a little bit of hair and bulk and fiber in there to keep the digestive tract moving along nicely. When you watch a cat hunt, because they are nocturnal predators and their food of choice is small rodents, the first thing they do is zero in on the sound of their prey. The cat's ears each move independently, and they use this to triangulate the source of the sound. So they're stimulated first by sound, then the cat begins to very, very slowly move closer to the sound. If the cat doesn't get any more stimulation from the prey, the cat will eventually give up. And in fact, in hunting cats, they're only successful about 1 out of 3 times in their hunt. But let's suppose the little mouse makes another sound or moves. That will stimulate the cat to go even closer. If the mouse is so imprudent or inexperienced enough to keep putting out sound and maybe moving around a little bit, then the cat will pick up the odor of the rodent, and that will stimulate the cat to come in even more and faster, and eventually the amount of stimulation coming from the prey triggers the cat to pounce, kill, and then eat. So from this we can learn several things. One, it takes the least amount of stimulation to get a cat to stalk something, and it takes the most amount of stimulation to get the cat to actually eat something. The second thing is that in darkness, sound is the most important stimulation. and taste is the last thing that will trigger a cat's appetite. So the hierarchy goes sound first, then motion, odor, texture as the cat gloms on to the prey, holds it with teeth and claws, and then finally the actual taste of it. In daylight, motion and sound may be equal. The reason cats preferentially hunt rodents over birds if given a chance is because rodents are what are called bulk feeders. They stay in one place while they eat. They also eliminate there. That means they're in a very confined space for a relatively long period of time, which enables the cat to sneak up. Birds are pecky eaters, so they're constantly jumping about. Also, pound for pound, birds are very, very low nutritional value compared to rodents. A cat may have to expend more energy catching a bird and eating and digesting it than it's worth. What does this mean to the average pet owner? Well, what it means is that if a cat gets upper respiratory virus that interferes with their sense of smell, maybe gives them a little bit of a sore throat, these animals may stop eating because they can't smell their food. And what we feed them, particularly if you're feeding dry, doesn't make any noise, doesn't move, doesn't smell anyhow, and the texture isn't all that great. I have seen cats who, after a few days of not eating, evidently cross that line between when this is a concern and when it isn't. And they forget about it. If you mix up a little bit of, I always keep a box of instant baby rice cereal on hand and mix that with a little tiny bit of cooked chicken breast or the water from the cooking the chicken breast or strained baby chicken, if you can find it, which I never can. If you mix that up into a paste, put a little bit of that on the end of your index finger and then smoosh that up against the roof of the cat's mouth, they'll lick it, and it's like some of these cats, you know, you can tell by their expression, it's like, oh, I remember I used to do that. And then you offer them some more, and they'll start eating again. There's also a nutritional supplement that a lot of veterinarians carry called NutriCal. This is also very, very palatable. A little bit of that is enough to jumpstart the non-eating cat sometimes. Other times, making the food soupy, elevating it so that the cat can easily lap it up without bending their heads down will work if the cat has a sore throat, pharyngitis, in addition to not being able to smell the food. In older cats, the sense of smell begins to go. Consequently, that might require more heroic efforts. I had one client years ago who had an ancient cat who had developed renal insufficiency and went into renal failure. What happens with these cats is they'll go along pretty well for a while. Then they stop eating, and you have to give them fluids and jumpstart them. This woman, because her cat had been an avid hunter and because she understood what triggered the cat's appetite, would cook chicken breast, and she would use garlic and give it a more pungent aroma. Then she would actually run around her kitchen making chicken noises and bird noises. And in general, what some people would consider making a fool of herself, but what she was doing is that she was feeding the sound and motion into this process. She was coupling it with a scent of that food, and then after she did that for a while, then she offered the food to the old cat. I don't have any scientific proof of this, but I would say she probably kept that cat going with a quality life for at least a year or two beyond what I ever expected. People take advantage of the predatory dance when they play with cats, and there are two problems to keep in mind relative to this. One, I am not a big fan of dragging ribbons and strings and yarn for cats to catch. If you're going to do it, tie a loop on one end of the string and never let it off your wrist. The reason for this is because, again, we see the same sequence with this. Excuse me while I move away from the dogs playing. Same sequence. The game starts with the person dragging the string slowly, the cat starts to stalk it, the person jiggles it some more and gets the cat to move in closer, and then they jiggle it some more, and eventually the cat will pounce on it and grab the string with their teeth and their claws. No problem. Fun game, good exercise, everyone has a good time. However, there are situations in which, just by the luck of the draw, just as the owner has stimulated the cat enough to go into the pounce, kill, and eat part of it, something happens. The phone rings, the doorbell rings, and the owner drops the string or the yarn, and when they're done doing whatever it was that they had to do, they can't find the string or the yarn. They assume that the cat has just dragged it off somewhere. And sometimes the cat has. But other times, if the cat has been stimulated far enough along in the predatory process, the cat will have eaten the string or the yarn. And this can create very, very serious medical problems. In keeping with this sort of holiday theme, I know that some of you might be putting up your Christmas trees, maybe right after Thanksgiving or certainly in the next few weeks. Tinsel is another problem. In the old days, it was the lead in the tinsel that we worried about. Now we worry about the mylar or other synthetic tinsel for the same reason we worry about string or yarn. Plus, unlike the lead tinsel, the synthetics, the mylar, is very hard to pick up on an x-ray. So, frankly, if you have cats, I wouldn't use it. But if you have some burning desire to use it, keep it away from the lower branches of the tree, and preferably put the tree somewhere where you can keep the cat away from it when you're not there to monitor the cat's activity around the tree at all times. Another place where the predatory dance comes into play is in laser play. I'm not a big fan of laser play with either dogs or cats because I have seen more than a few situations where this has led to obsessive-compulsive shadow chasing. And although I don't have any scientific proof of this, I have no studies of this, I do know that based on what I know about predatory behavior in both cats and dogs, is that the predatory sequence is a sequence. A lot of times what happens with laser play is people play with the animal and have the animal do the chasing and the pouncing and stuff like that until they, the people, get tired of the game. Then they just shut the laser off and put it back on the shelf. However, for the animal, and particularly for, you know, a true carnivore like a cat, I mean, cats have one function. They're predators. Right? They're not like dogs, some who have been bred to do aborted hunting, if you will. They locate the rabbits, they locate the deer, they locate the birds, but they do not eat them. That has been bred right into them. Or they herd the sheep, but they don't hurt them. We don't have any of that in cats. Cats are true predators. So if people are playing with a laser, and then they get tired of the game, that cat is going to be left in a state of arousal. All other physiology has prepared them for this, the ultimate conclusion of this act, which is to grab and kill, whether it's grabbing a toy or something else, but they're primed. And the end part of the sequence is a heck of a lot harder to abort than in the stock. And there is a point of no return. So if you're going to play with your cats using a laser or your dogs, what I would recommend and strongly recommend is that you end the game on a toy that the animal can actually pounce on and grab. And when the animal does that, then turn the light out. That way, you won't leave the cat looking for that light so that he or she can complete that sequence. So these are fundamental animal behaviors, in this case primarily feline behaviors, The same behaviors that enabled small wildcats to survive for thousands and thousands of years, and in fact, relative to body type and fundamental behaviors, for millions of years. Cats are one of the few groups of mammals that have not undergone an extensive transformation of body type and behaviors over the millennia, because they got it right, or they got it right for them to survive. Now, what we have to do is to bring ourselves up to speed about their normal behaviors and what they communicate, so we can understand how these play out in our homes and how we can fill their needs and our needs simultaneously. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and I hope your Thanksgiving feast smells like something better than cat food.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.